John Hankey is an independent documentary filmmaker. He teaches how history really unfolded and exposes conspiracies you didn't know existed. His films cover a wide array of topics, including the JFK assassination, the Rothschilds, October 7th, and Trump's failed assassination attempt. Put on your headphones, grab your tinfoil hat, and get ready to learn how the world really operates with John Hankey.
Who ran Operation Mongoose? Who did, right, all these guys that I mentioned, all the shooters are there working for Lansdale. Who did Lansdale answer to? They all answered to Bobby Kennedy. Now, when I pinned JFK Jr.'s murder on Bush Jr., I guess you were more impressed. I don't know. I can't answer that question. But somehow Bobby Kennedy got past you. In the movie JFK, that's a good movie because I keep coming back to it because it's a good movie. And in that movie, they report how this FBI employee who went on to become a local savings and loan president, right? He wasn't a bankster. He wasn't a garbage man. He worked for a savings and loan. And, you know, if you watched It's a Wonderful Life, you know that savings and loans are very often really heroic people who work really hard for, you know, they could be making, Jesus, 1,000 times more money, literally, if they were working as Wall Street robbers. And instead, they're trying to get people, find out who's credit worthy that we can trust with a loan and going to live in this house and is going to do their best to keep up the payments. But before, while he was still in college, if I'm not mistaken, he was working part-time for the FBI as a night clerk. And his job was to take the teletype messages off of the teletype and put them on the desk of whoever was going to be responsible in the morning for going through this stuff. And he saw a teletype that said from Hoover saying that there's going to be an assassination attempt on John Kennedy in Dallas. And he thought, that's interesting. And, you know, it hit him, right? It was a hard slap in the face. And he put it on the desk of whoever was supposed to have gotten it and was probably then told, handed it back and told to file it. And the day of the assassination at lunchtime, he ran to the file and pulled it out and made a hand copy of it, he says. And I forget how Garrison got a hold of the story. He may have contacted Garrison. I have no idea. In any case, his story comes to light that Hoover had warned there's going to be an assassination attempt on Kennedy in Dallas. Well, why didn't they? This is Hoover, right? And if he put it in writing, you know he said it in, right? He verbally communicated it, but he wants to cover his ass and make sure that there is written documentation of the fact that he gave this warning. The question is, why didn't anybody pay attention to it? I mean, Kennedy could have gone to Dallas and he could have spoken at the trademark without having a motorcade. He could have, right? You see what I mean? So who in the Kennedy administration is responsible for Kennedy's safety? Who's in charge of the Secret Service? Who's over the Secret Service? The Attorney General. And who's that? Bobby Kennedy. And so then, you know, I'm going through all these documents. And we'll take a minute because this is a freaking bombshell. I'm not disappointed in you. I made it, right? As a teacher, I absolutely understand that if I give a lesson and I give a test and the students don't do well on the test, whose fault is it? This guy over here, the guy who failed to teach it. All right. Well, and I'll let myself off the hook a little bit because when I first, like 20 years ago, 18 years ago, some guy, David Korn, who has written a number of good books and a good guy, solid researcher, worked for The Nation magazine, may still, I think he works for Ramparts or some other progressive magazine. And he told me, you need this book, You need to read this book, Live by the Sword. We were discussing the Kennedy assassination in my video on it at that time, that, you know, pointed at Bush. And he said, you need to read that book. And I read it, and that book said that Bobby Kennedy was in charge of Mongoose, and that he was responsible for all of these terrorist attacks against Cuba, and that therefore the Cubans wanted to kill Kennedy and did. Well, so it's a piece, the punchline is a piece of garbage, but the lead up had all of these allegations that Bobby Kennedy was in charge of Mongoose. And, you know, by that time I probably was aware of the fact that E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis and the Jerry Hemmings and Maria Lorenz and, you know, I had all of this background that the Operation Mongoose people were all in Dealey Plaza. And if Bobby was in charge of Operation Mongoose, that's a rather disturbing suggestion. And I dismissed it as being a lie, right? If I were going to kill John Kennedy, I would set his brother up to take the blame, right? That's pretty good, don't you think? Right? Let's use the guys in Operation Mongoose because they answer to Bobby. So, I figured that it was a lie. Or we'll say that they answer to Bobby. They don't really answer to Bobby, but we'll say that they answer to Bobby. Well, so we're going to talk about Bobby for a minute. We're going to talk about Bobby for 10 minutes. Lansdale, I mentioned The Quiet American. And in The Quiet American, Graham Greene, have you heard of Graham Greene? He was a big deal in the late 50s. He was a big deal in the late 50s. And in the late 50s, they made a version of The Quiet American that they completely changed. But I'm trying to think if he didn't. He wrote a bunch of books, and he was very famous. He liked to, he would include, they had sex in them. You know, not a lot of graphic sex, but the characters would have sexual things going on, and it, you know, it sold books. But he had been a reporter for the Times of London during World War II. Well, that was his cover. He was a spy for the British during World War II, and being a reporter of the Times of London was his cover. And when the war was over, they sent him to Saigon. Well, so he's a spy for the British. He's not an operative. He's a spy. He doesn't do anything to anybody. He collects information. And he has contacts all over the place. And he knows the communists. According to the book that he wrote, his assistant was a high-ranking communist operative in Saigon. And he would give Graham Greene, the reporter, inside dope, right? So that Greene was very, very much facilitated in being able to give reliable reports about all sorts of things by the fact that he had this able assistant who, you know, was, well, I don't know if you know, I'm turning on the heater over here. The government of South Vietnam and the U.S. Army were completely infiltrated by the communists, so that the communists not only knew what the communists were doing, they knew what everybody else was doing as well, right? So these bombs go off in the marketplace, and one of the things in these bombs go off in the marketplace, Graham Greene, the spy and the reporter, writes a story saying that everybody knows that it's Lansdale. And I don't remember who tells the story, and it might have been Lansdale, and it might have been a Lansdale biographer, and it might have been Graham Greene, and it might have been all of them, about Lansdale walking past a restaurant full of French officers who started booing and yelling and calling him all sorts of names because he was the guy who set off the bomb in the marketplace. And, you know, the French officers were not in the business and not interested in blowing up the marketplace in Saigon. It didn't make them look good, but they, you know, they were human beings, and nobody, I think, most very, very, very few people like seeing women and children, especially, and civilians slaughtered in that fashion. I mean, just butchered by the, you know, the flying metal from this, I think there were two cars that exploded in the marketplace. But so, you know, Graham Greene knows all these French guys, and he knows the communists, and he knows everything. And he tries to file the report with the Times of London. And of course, they don't print it. And so he writes the book, The Quiet American. And Lansdale, you know, has a reputation at in 1960. Lansdale has a reputation as a CIA operative and blah, 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 whatever. And, you know, his background is an advertising exec. So his lying is his specialty, right? Presenting lies. And if you're CIA, right, lying is a, right, one of a very, very much a key element in your bag of tricks, probably the principal element in your bag of tricks. Anyway, so that Lansdale has been promoting himself and what a genius he is and what a genius he was in the Philippines. In the Philippines, he did the same thing, right? He arranged attacks by his operatives on civilians, and then had the guy that he was promoting as a hero come in and defend this little village from this attack from these communist operatives that were his. They weren't communist operatives. They were his operatives anyway. One of the things that Graham Greene learned always is you have to ask the question. When you see something, when an event occurs, a slaughter, a battle, right? Some sort of what we might call a terrorist attack. There was some little village that was exterminated, and Graham Greene saw it, and he said, well, the French blamed the communists, because why wouldn't they? And the CIA blamed the communists, because of course. But Graham Greene, as an intelligence officer, looked at it and said, wait a minute, these people, these are the friends of the communists. The communists, the villagers are their friends. These are the people who supply them with food and supply them with information, right? Tell us where the troops are operating and whatnot. This just doesn't make any sense that the communists would do this sort of thing. And the ditto for the bombs going off in the marketplace. But he's then able to, probably with help from the French officers, but then with help from the communists, he's able to assemble the evidence proving that it was Lansdale. And it was kind of a, what's the word? When you have a secret that everybody knows what the facts are. What do you call that? I don't know. A public secret. I don't know. Anyway, the official lie, right, is the opposite of the public secret. If you know that the official story is a lie, that means you know what the secret truth is. Anyhow, Lansdale is promoting himself because he wants to be the ambassador to South Vietnam for Kennedy, right? The new president comes in. Ooh, ooh, ooh. He tells everybody he knows, tell Kennedy that he should appoint me. Tell him what a great guy I am and that he should appoint me as president. And one of the main people that he gets to is Bobby. And so Bobby is rooting for him to become U.S. ambassador to South Vietnam. And the high-ranking member of the State Department, but he's a member of the system, right? He's not an appointed high-ranking member of the State Department. He's a guy who's come up through the ranks as a member of the State Department, civil service, right? He's not a political appointee. He's a civil servant, but he is perhaps the highest-ranking civil servant in the State Department, and he sees to it that Kennedy gets the story that Dag Hammarskjöld, the former head of the United Nations who was murdered in a plane accident, told the U.S. Secretary of State, who apparently wrote about it, because this is official business, that Lansdale was the guy who set off the bombs in Saigon, that Lansdale is the character from The Quiet American, both of those statements, that Lansdale is the character from The Quiet American, which was, you haven't heard of it, but it was probably maybe the bestseller that year. One of the principal bestsellers of that period. I mean, I'd heard about it when I was, 8 years old. I certainly wasn't going to read it anyhow. I think my sister, my oldest sister, is very, very literate, let's say. And the story, but you see, the head of the UN tells the U.S. Secretary of State, listen, we all know who set off those bombs. Graham Greene says it was Lansdale, and nobody is. In fact, Lansdale is now running around saying, hey, that's me in the book, because Lansdale is such an, he's an idiotic narcissist. You may be familiar with idiotic narcissists. They're prominent in our current events. Anyway, this idiotic narcissist Lansdale is running around telling people, yeah, that's me. I'm the guy I had a dog, like the character in Graham Greene's book. In fact, he had never mind, you don't need that detail. But the point is that John Kennedy said, well, this high-ranking guy in the State Department told John Kennedy, or told maybe he told McNamara, you can't have this guy in your administration. You can't have people that the world knows are criminals of the worst sort as being your ambassador to Vietnam. Not if you want to be taken seriously by anybody who is remotely honest on the world stage. And Kennedy wanted to be taken seriously and wanted to be considered as an honest operative. And so Lansdale got nixed, and they told him that he was therefore going to have a lower ranking position working for the Defense Department, not the State Department. You can continue to be a horrible terrorist and can continue to with your nefarious ways, but you have to do it under the military, not under the State Department. The State Department is supposed to pretend to be clean. And in fact, we don't tell the State Department what you're doing over here. There is a letter, I've seen it with my own two eyes. Bobby Kennedy writes to McNamara, the head of defense, right, and says, I want Lansdale on my staff. That's probably in March. In April, Bobby Kennedy's staff, and the name of the guy who wrote it is, he doesn't give his name, he gives his title. And it's Lansdale, who wrote Operation Northwoods. You remember Operation Northwoods? Well, write it down if you care. You can Google it, right? And Wikipedia will tell you all about how Operation Northwoods was this scandalous memo from, they don't say Lansdale, but it would have been from the Department of Defense. It was from the Department of Defense because the head of the Joint Chiefs got fired by Kennedy for endorsing this Operation Northwoods, which suggested we should get a plane full of students, fly it by Cuba and shoot it down and say the Cubans did it. So kind of 9/11 on a smaller scale. And then use that to justify an invasion of Cuba by the United States. And we should set off bombs all over the place, all over the United States, and claim that the Cubans are doing it, and use that, right? It's all part of a broad campaign where we're blaming the Cubans for making war in the United States, and we'll use that to justify invading Cuba and killing a couple million Cubans and certainly many thousands of U.S. soldiers, because the Cubans, they're not fooling around. They know what they're doing. They certainly know the Cuban jungles better than we do, and not to mention the Cuban neighborhoods better than we do, not to mention the Russians, and God knows what the Russians have equipped them with. Well, we found out, didn't we? Anyway, Bobby Kennedy ain't the guy you thought he was. I had been taught by my mentors to blame Lyndon Johnson for the Kennedy assassination. And I thought, well, let me start reading these memos that, Jesus Christ, I went through at least 10,000 memos. Just the day-to-day stuff, right? And Kennedy killed, or Johnson killed Kennedy because he wanted to have the Vietnam War. Well, Kennedy sent Johnson to Vietnam, and Johnson came back and wrote a 10-page report. And in his 10-page report, I think that's where he might have, the one thing you will have heard of that is that Johnson may have said that Diem, the U.S.-installed president of South Vietnam, was the Churchill of Vietnam. Well, he went on to say, Johnson did, in his memo to Kennedy, whatever you do, don't send U.S. troops to South Vietnam. You can't send them planes either, because if you do, you have to send troops. And if you send troops, you have to send troops to protect those troops. And it's a black hole that has no bottom. And if you want to end up in the same position as the French were before us, of chasing irregulars all over the South, all over the paddy fields of South Asia, that's a very precise quote. If you don't want to end up in the French position of chasing irregulars all over the paddy, the rice paddies, do not under any circumstances send any planes or troops to Vietnam. Well, that's not the Johnson that we were told to expect. So I'm trying to think. Oh, my goodness. Well, so then Johnson is sitting in the limousine, right? And he sees that it stops. And he sees that the shooter on the knoll counts to six and then blows Kennedy's brains out. And he sees the car zoom away. And he sees that the newspapers say that it was Oswald, who was certainly not the guy who fired the shot from the knoll, if he was in the book depository at the time, which they say that he was. So Johnson recognizes that the Secret Service was involved. He recognizes that the news media are all involved in repeating this, you know, very, very, very patently obvious lie. I mean, right, like I'm saying, there's four reporters who went on camera to say that the shot, the limousine stopped in front of the grassy knoll. And anybody who was anywhere near knew that the heard shots from more than one direction. There's all sorts of witnesses. And on the plane flight, you can't persuade me that on the plane flight with Johnson and all of Kennedy's people back from Dallas to Washington, that these guys, all of them, Kenny O'Donnell was in the Secret Service, Kennedy's right-hand man, right? His closest friend, right? He's not a political operative. He's Kennedy's genuine, sincere, closest friend, and had been since Kennedy came back from the war. Said that it was very, very clear to him that the kill shot came from the grassy knoll. And he says this in a conversation with Tip O'Neill, who had been the Speaker of the House at one point. And O'Neill says, well, why didn't you tell anybody? If I'd have known, I'd have talked. And I don't remember. It doesn't matter. Does it matter? The point is that Johnson knew what was going on. The CIA comes walking in the morning and says, oh, by the way, Oswald was in Mexico City talking to the Russians about killing Kennedy. And he gets that phone call at 10:20 in the morning and hangs up the phone. And at 10:40, and this is documented, Hoover calls him up and says, the CIA is lying to you. I have their tape of that conversation. And my guys in Dallas who have been talking to Oswald for the previous 8 hours, listened to that tape and said, absolutely, positively, that was not Oswald. Oswald is so fluent in Russian, he is often mistaken as a native. And the guy on the phone conversation is very, very, very not fluent in Russian. And we have a photograph. And you look at the photograph, and if you were trying to pick somebody who looked the least like Oswald that you possibly could, that's who they have. But so, Johnson knows that the CIA is trying to push him into war with Russia. He knows the Secret Service is beyond their eyeballs involved in the assassination. And Hoover's the one guy telling him the truth. Oh, in the military, right? The military, Johnson knows that, because Hoover would have told him, because Hoover got messages that you can see in black and white from the FBI agents at the autopsy describing how the military completely botched the autopsy and told the doctors, don't examine the throat wound, ordered them not to examine the throat wound and ordered them not to examine the back wound. And then, you know, deliver a, right, these guys got to see the photographs and they got to see the body, the FBI agents I'm speaking of, and they knew that Kennedy had a fist-sized hole in the back of his head. But the report that came out that, you know, within hours from the military was that Kennedy had, you know, a nickel-sized entrance wound in the back of his head. So that I'm coming to see that Johnson, the day Johnson knew who killed Kennedy and they knew why. You can't persuade me. Oh, that later on, the guy's name is Goodwin and it doesn't really matter, but Johnson is trying to persuade one of his speechwriters that he's a good guy and this guy should be helping him write good speeches. And probably these were about the civil rights movement, but he shows this speechwriter the document that Galbraith, the professor in Austin, found. He shows him, and Goodwin writes a book about it, talking about how he saw the document that showed that Kennedy had said that everybody out by the end of 65. So that Kennedy is sharing this stuff with Johnson, and there's a situation. I mentioned that the anti-Castro movement, Operation 40, Operation Mongoose, those guys are completely infiltrated by the Cubans, the pro-Castro Cubans, and they know everything that's going on. But after the missile crisis, right, Kennedy and Khrushchev became friendly. That is to say, they trusted each other for at least a split second and agreed that, look, we don't want World War III. We don't want the complete destruction of both of our countries and 90% of the white people on the globe, right? Because the pollution is going to be mainly in the northern hemisphere. I mean, eventually it'll work its way south, but it's going to be hellacious on the northern hemisphere, which is where 90% at least of the white people live. Anyway, there's this agreement, and Kennedy swears, and you won't find a document in any, right? I've been through these 10,000 pages. It didn't show up there, but you see it any number of other places that Kennedy swore to Khrushchev, look, you get the missiles out of Cuba, and you have my absolute word that we will not invade Cuba. That's not going to happen, and I will end the terrorism. And so in probably October, right, not very long before the assassination, the Khrushchev, I believe, it doesn't really matter, some high-ranking Russian gets the word to tell, I believe, Dean Rusk, the Secretary of State, and he tells Dean Rusk, your boys are planning to blow up a Russian ship in the harbor of Havana, and says the Russian, I am instructed by my boss to ask whether we didn't learn anything from the missile crisis. We're starting over from square one. The Russians are going to send missiles and you guys are going to do what you're going to do. What's going on? Where are we at? And Rusk tells Kennedy, and Kennedy says, why would they say that? We're not planning to blow up any ships in the harbor of Havana. Are we, Bobby? And Bobby says, oh, no. And a couple of days later, one of the Russian ship gets blown up in the harbor of Havana. And Kennedy calls in everybody and says, what should we do about this situation? And he's very nice about it, right? And it's noticeable. You can hear it in the language, in the black and white of the language, that Kennedy isn't pointing fingers and he's not yelling and screaming. He's not red in the face. He's trying, you know, if you're trying to get somebody to confess, right? He's trying to cajole a confession out of one of these people. And really, I don't think he's trying to cajole a confession so much as he's trying to stop this from going on. And he wants to be able to call up Khrushchev and say, I handled it. And so I'm laughing as I'm realizing how much time this is taking. But, you know, it was, like I said, it was 50 years of work, and you're not going to get this anyplace else. Well, and I think it's completely applicable anytime you look at the president and his relationship with his advisors and the military. Take a lesson. Kennedy calls in all of his advisors, including his little brother, and he says, what are we going to do? And Dean Rusk says, oh, we should give the Coast Guard another couple of ships to, you know, try to stop these guys. And McNamara says, oh, we should lie more emphatically and deny it. And I forget what Dulles says, and it doesn't matter. And but so everybody has some half-assed recommendation that is not, we should stop it. And Bobby says, well, what do you think, Bobby? And Bobby says, well, we can't stop it because we don't know how to get a hold of these guys. Because I didn't supply them with the boats. I'm not paying their salaries. I didn't supply them with all of the weapons. I didn't supply them with the intelligence that there's a Russian ship in the harbor of Havana. But we don't know how to get in touch with these guys. And when everybody's had their say, Kennedy says, so Lyndon, what do you think? And Lyndon says, I think we should get the military on them. And the next time they hit the water, let the U.S. military take care of it. They can handle this, can't they? And which is to say, kill them, right? Blow their ship. The U.S. military is not going to send these guys bouquets or an engraved invitation to suggest that they turn around. They're going to blow them out of the water. And Johnson's recommendation was we should kill them. We should blow them out of the water. And if John Kennedy had listened to Lyndon Johnson and done what Lyndon Johnson recommended, none of those guys would have been in Dealey Plaza. Okay? So anyway, you see what I'm saying? This is more than, there's a couple of lessons here. And the one that we were talking about is what a villain Bobby is. And what a villain Lyndon Johnson isn't. And I'll say as an introduction, we're talking about Bobby, but we're going to talk about Lyndon, because Lyndon Johnson, in his final interview before they killed him, you heard me anyway, says that they're inviting him to do this and that. In his final interview, Galbraith was in Paris when they signed the peace accords in 1968 between North Vietnam and South Vietnam and the United States. And Nixon got on the phone and told the South Vietnamese to pull out of the peace deal. 1968, the war was over, and Nixon sabotaged it, and Johnson had everybody's phone tapped, and Johnson called in Everett Dirksen, the head of the Republicans in the Senate, and told him what the information he had, and Dirksen said, that's treason. And Johnson said, yeah, it's treason, and I should arrest him and put him up against the wall and have him shot, but I'm telling you, and tell him to cut it out. But they succeeded in sabotaging the peace process. The same thing happened in Ukraine in 2014, by the way. Jeffrey Sachs, which is another name people can write down, Jeffrey Sachs, he's like Forrest Gump. He's the negotiator. He's everywhere in that story. He worked for Boris Yeltsin. Right, the last guy before Putin. He knows all of these characters very, very well. He knows Angela Merkel and all of the leaders of Europe very, very well. And he says that the peace deal in Ukraine had been signed. The ink was on the paper, and that the US and Britain came in and said, oh no, 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 no. We have to kill a million. We have to kill the strongest, youngest, brightest, bravest Ukrainians first, and then you can make peace. Because you're going to defeat the Soviet Union. I mean, you're going to defeat the Russians anyway. It's just so despicable. Anyway. Johnson had nothing bad to say about Nixon. Nixon had caused the Vietnam War to not end in 1968. And in his final interview, Johnson didn't have anything bad to say about Nixon. I was surprised. And then they asked him, well, what about you and Bobby? And he said, Bobby's a snake. And I don't understand, he's a snake. And I don't understand how he manages to charm all of these people in the media into thinking he's such a wonderful guy. And okay, so put a pin in that. The Tonkin Gulf. And for people in your audience who don't know, in 1968, if I'm not mistaken, might have been 67, might have been 65. It was 65. The CIA claimed that a North Vietnamese ship had fired on the USS Maddox in the Tonkin Gulf. And they come running in to tell Johnson that story, breathlessly. And Johnson comes walking in. I'm reading this account. Johnson comes walking into the room laughing. Oh, Mr. President, we have to meet. It's a horrible, huge, huge thing has happened. And Johnson comes walking into the room laughing. And they tell him, oh, yeah, this somebody fired on one of our destroyers. And Johnson laughs and says, now, who the hell would want to do a damn fool thing like that? Because he knows that the North Vietnamese patrol boats probably weigh 1/10,000th what a destroyer has. The patrol boats have a range of about 800 yards, and the destroyer has a range of 5,000 yards. The notion that a boat, and guess who's got the better radar? So the notion that a North Vietnamese patrol boat could fire on a destroyer when the destroyer has over six times the range, it's just completely, patently ridiculous. And Johnson said so. And then he turns on Cyrus Vance, and it doesn't matter. And he says, I don't suppose we were doing anything out there that we shouldn't have, were we? And Vance starts to hem and haw. And there's a sailor in the room. I don't think the guy is an ensign. He's whatever they do, first class seaman. And he says, well, yeah, Mr. President, we did have some stuff going on out there. And then Vance is burned, and he has to admit that the U.S. was having these boats, and they would zoom in to the North Vietnamese coast, and they would fire on naval installations on the North Vietnamese coast, and then they would zoom out into the path of the American destroyer, hoping that they would be pursued into the path of the American destroyer in order to set this thing up. And Johnson said, now, you look it up on Wikipedia, but if you look it up in your history book, it'll probably tell you that the Vietnam War started because of the Tonkin Gulf incident. And Johnson, they said, oh, and we want you to announce that you're sending troops and start bombing. And Johnson said, we ain't doing any of that. We're not doing any of it. You guys started it. Now get out of here. I got stuff to do. And he turns to the admiral. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs is there. And he says, did I pick the wrong guy for this job? You coming in here with this cock and bull crap? Well, that you're going to walk a million miles to find that story. I forget where I stumbled upon it. Oh, yeah, I remember. And you don't want to know. But just, I'm reading some super obscure book who is writing the biography / autobiography. He was helping the guy write his autobiography when the guy died. Bundy, McGeorge Bundy, who was just, he's one of the high pinnacle villains of the story. And the guy who was selected, you know, they wanted to select somebody credible, and he's a credible and really good historian. And he included one of the witnesses to this meeting about the Tonkin Gulf. Some guy had told this story, and he included it. And I look up and discover that this guy existed. He's 94 years old, and he's alive and in Washington and coherent and lucid. And I find his, I don't know how the hell I got his phone number. I called up information. I don't know. Or if, whatever. I was got in contact with him and I said, you want to do an interview? And he said, oh, hell yeah. Well, you know, right? Because one, he was the head. The State Department has their own CIA, right? You follow me. The State Department doesn't trust the CIA. They're not stupid. So they want to have their own, they don't want to rely on the CIA for intelligence. Now, they do what the CIA is supposed to do, which is read every newspaper on the planet and clip the most important articles and summarize them. So I fly in to see this 94-year-old guy, and he does everything but say that Bobby killed his brother. He three different times he circles back around to let me know what an evil right-wing monster Bobby was and how nobody appreciates this, that Bobby put on this show of being, you know, the leaders of the civil rights movement were not fooled, by the way. I am nobody's Negro. I'm trying to remember the name of the guy, but it's a documentary on Netflix. If you Google Nobody's Negro, Go Tell It on the Mountain, James Baldwin and the leaders of the civil rights movement hated Bobby Kennedy's guts because they could tell that Bobby Kennedy thought they were slime. At least he treated them like he thought that they were slime. Anyhow, and then you find out all of this stuff about how... So this is my last point on the subject. And you have my permission to cut the whole thing out. I'm telling you, did I say this? I don't think I said this. I talked about how this guy, David Corn, said, read, live by the sword. And I read that Bobby was in charge of Mongoose and I rejected it. And I then contacted the Kennedy Library and said, I want to see Bobby Kennedy's. The Kennedy Library conducted interviews with all sorts of people and said, look, we won't release this to anybody for 25 years. So you can tell the truth, right? We want to know about the truth about, we want to know the truth about what was going on. This isn't for publication tomorrow. Please tell us the truth. And Bobby Kennedy did one of these interviews, but you can't get it. But they, by the way, Jackie Kennedy's testimony in front of the Warren Commission is still secret. You can't read her talking about how the limousine stopped for 6 seconds. Anyhow, Bobby Kennedy's interview, what you can do is you can order it and they will send it to your local library and you can go into the local library and you can't photocopy. Well, nowadays, phones have cameras. So that they forgot about it. Well, they didn't know about that 25 years ago or 50 years ago. So they sent it to my local library, went down and looked, and Bobby Kennedy brags about supervising Operation Mongoose. He brags about how great they were. Of course, he doesn't mention anything except burning cane fields. This is the last bomb. If you knew a lot about the Kennedy assassination, you would have heard of Katzenbach. The day that Oswald was shot, but I believe before Oswald was shot, Nicholas Katzenbach, who was Bobby's right-hand man and went on to become Attorney General himself under one of the other presidents, anyhow, he wrote a memo to Johnson suggesting that Johnson should appoint a panel of high-level, blue blood, blue ribbon, absolutely trustworthy people to find that, to investigate and to make the finding that Oswald had acted alone. Now, that's a scandalous thing for Katzenbach to have put his name on. And Katzenbach talked to David Talbot, who the experts in your audience will recognize. He's written The Devil's Chessboard and a number of other important books, Brothers. Katzenbach told this to Talbot that he was ashamed of having written that memo because the Dallas police were investigating this as a conspiracy, right? And you can find Saturday's Dallas Morning News talking about how the police say, yeah, we know it was a conspiracy and we're going to get them all. So Katzenbach is ashamed to have written that memo, but he tells Talbot, I did it because Bobby begged me to. And, you know, I was so sympathetic to Bobby. His brother had just been murdered. And what am I supposed to do? You know, so I said, okay, and I wrote it and I sent it. And today I'm ashamed. And I come to find out that Bobby was the supervisor of all these guys who were in Dealey Plaza. And now I'm not ashamed. I'm furious. Right? We knew who, Bobby knew who did it. And he could have gone after those guys. And he was the friggin' attorney general. He could have gone after those guys. And he didn't. And why didn't he? Well, when you figure that out, when you have an answer to that question, other than that he murdered his brother, get a hold of me. Get a hold of Courtney and she'll get a hold of me. I mean that very, very sincerely. No, seriously, I very much value the communications that I receive. And can I give my email? And you post it, please. I mean, you know, if somebody sends me something stupid and crazy, I just block them. It's not a problem. And, you know, I don't mind taking 30 seconds to do that. X, J as in John, Hankey as in Hankey, H-A-N-K-E-Y at Gmail. But, you know, I'm telling you, somebody pointed out to me that I had missed that Roger Craig had written that a guy who was arrested as a shooter had identified himself as an independent oil contractor from Houston. Somebody else pointed that out to me. And I would never have considered saying any of this stuff about Bobby until I flew and talked to this 94-year-old guy who wanted me to know that Bobby was an evil individual, and that he was in charge. That Bobby was this was a specific question that I asked him. That it was Bobby who gave the order to blow up that Russian ship in the Havana Harbor. He didn't have any, and you know, he's the head of the State Department intelligence. It's his job to know these kinds of secrets, and he was in that position at the time. And so it's a very, very well endowed, right? Fundamentally, powerfully endorsed notion that Bobby is not who we thought he was, and that he killed his brother, and that he well, see, because here's the thing: is that you have Hoover saying, you go to Dallas, there's going to be an assassination attempt, and somebody told John, don't worry about it. And who could have told John that besides Bobby and had John listen to it? And my answer to that question is nobody. And I'll tell you what Bobby told him. He said, oh, you know, we have operatives out there pretending that they're planning to kill Kennedy. And that's the source. It was one of our guys, and we had him say it, and we had him say it at Jack Ruby's club, because we wanted to see whether the local police would catch it. And the local police caught it, and the local police informed the FBI, and the FBI is telling us. And so, you know, there's nothing to worry about it. These are our guys. It's not a problem.
Now that you know where we've been, find out where we're going. Tune in to Ladies Love Politics, where you can stay informed without going insane.